Anatomy and Physiology, Gulf Coast State College. We're talking about the skeletal system today, specifically the facial bones of the skull, which of course you remember are part of the axial skeleton. Remember, these PowerPoints also are not the ones you have in the course management system. I've taken these high quality digital photographs of the real deal because I think it's going to be super helpful, not just in lecture, but in lab. Don't tell anybody I told you this, but A&P 1 Lab, I think, is one of the most challenging courses on this campus. And that's why I chose to do the PowerPoints in this fashion. I'm really trying to give you guys, my students, an extra edge in that laboratory. But that also means you have to print out the PowerPoints in PDF format for note-taking, or have the outlines printed out, or both, whatever works best for you, so you can take notes and label and draw as you go along. Let's get to it. Recall that there are 8 different facial bones. In the introductory section of this system, I gave you a laundry list. Your book goes in that order. The PowerPoints match the PowerPoints that you have match the book, so they go in that same order. But we can't really go in that order as we're doing the skull in real life, so to speak. We have to go in the order that we see them. So just calm down, relax. All the 8 facial bones are there. They're just going to be in a different order because we have to get to them in a different order out of necessity. So just calm down, and when we get to a certain bone, just turn to that page in your notes and start taking notes. It's not that bad. Here we go. Here comes our right lateral view of the human skull. The lower jawbone has been removed. And let's look at something I mentioned on the cranial bone section. Let's start with this bone right here in the cheek. Yeah, in layman's terms, it's called the cheekbone, but we can't call it the cheekbone anymore. We have to call it the zygomatic bone. There's one special piece of the zygomatic bone you must know. And notice, it's this piece right here. This is a projection of the zygomatic bone. And you know the root word for projection is a process. The name of that process is called the temporal process. Why? Because whoever made this up decided that most processes would be named after what they're pointing to. I know that's confusing. That person grew up in backwards land or something like that, but that's the way it is, and we got to deal with it. This is the temporal process of the zygomatic bone because it's pointing to the temporal bone. You see, those two processes come together and they form this arch-like structure. Both of these together you would call the zygomatic arch. In lab, I'll just tell you because I kind of know how they pin the test. Typically, what they'll do is put the piece of clay with a pin in it right here and say, name this part of this bone. You have to say temporal process. If they put it just on the other side of the suture, and of course that line is your key landmark, if they put it over here and say, name this part of this bone, you're going to have to say zygomatic process. That's part of the temporal bone. Coming together, they form something called the zygomatic arch because it looks like an arch, like McDonald's arches. Let's stop right there. I want to tell you a fun story. Look at that bone. You think that arch is easy to break? Wait till you see it in lab and hold on to it and grab it. It's real easy to break. And I used to get called out in the middle of the night. And here was a typical story. 3 a.m., I'm in the ER. Someone's face is all smashed up. I said, what happened? And the guy would always say, I was out behind La Vila, minding my own business, and some guy just jumped me. Translation, once I talked to the police and got the report, was of course he was messing around with somebody that he should have been messing around with, and it was the same story every time. So yes, you will see it broken here in good old Panama City many times. Spring break is a good time for it. If they're just minor non-displaced fractures, a lot of time you just let them go. But of course, if they're serious, you got to do some repair. Let's move on to another bone. from a lateral view. Here is the upper jawbone. That's our next facial bone that we can see here. This is the maxilla. I remember the maxilla helps to mash our food. It's the upper jawbone. The upper jawbone has a couple of parts that we need to know. The first one that I will attack on this photograph is right here. This is sort of a projection of bone to hold on to the teeth. So a projection of bone, you know, is called a process. And the name for this right here, if it's tagged, is the alveolar process. Why? Alveoli means a pocket or socket or of something. You'll learn you have alveoli in your lungs for air. There's alveoli in your breast mammary glands for milk. All alveoli means is a pocket or socket for something. In this case, it's a pocket or socket for teeth. If they have the pin right here and say, name this part of this bone, you must say alveolar process. The only other facial bone I think that I'll hit on this slide is right here on the nose from the right lateral view. We're seeing the right nasal bone. Well, that's not so hard, is it? It's clearly a bone in the nose, and some rocket scientist called it the nasal bone. On the next slide coming up, I think I just zoomed in on that zygomatic arch, and yeah, there it is. You can see how thin and fragile this thing is, easily broken, like I told you in my little story. Be ready for either part of the arch tag separately and be able to name those processes. On the next slide, what I'm going to do is flip this thing around. We'll take a look at an anterior view, and we can see some of the bones we just talked about again. Let's first put my arrow on the zygomatic bone. So here's one on each side. Again, layman's terms, cheekbones. People sometimes like to beef up their cheeks, and this is the general region where you might slip a cheek implant. Over here, we clearly see now the extent of the two maxillae. They are paired bones. There's a right one and there's a left one joined together at a suture. So that's the upper jawbone called the maxilla that mashes your food. Name this part of this bone where the teeth are, you will say alveolar process. Bridge of the nose, we have a right and a left bone that some genius called, you got it, the nasal bones. One really cool fact I want to tell you about the maxilla or the upper jaw bones that tends to show up on lecture tests is this facial bone articulates with, which means forms joints with, all other facial bones except the mandible. That's kind of weird, isn't it? It makes joints with or connects with all other facial bones except the lower jaw bone. But that's the kind of fact that tends to show up in a testing situation. I might add here, since we are going to look at the sphenoid bone, believe it or not, again in this section, the sphenoid bone has a similar test question just waiting for you, by the way, that I don't want y'all to miss. The sphenoid bone articulates with or makes joints with, connects with all other cranial bones. All other, underline it, cranial bones. The sphenoid bone really is sort of like the keystone to the skull, isn't it? Get ready, because what we're going to do next is take a high magnification look at this right orbit, and here it comes. There's a right eye socket looking right at you. Let's do the six of the seven bones that you're responsible for in the laboratory first. And it's easier than you might think, because many of these are old friends of ours that we've already studied. For example, on the top, this is the frontal bone in the front. And if you follow it in the lab, as you should with your fingers, just kind of curl them under there and follow it to where it ends at the orange suture, it just forms the roof or the superior part of the orbit. Same thing with the zygomatic bone we just did. Curl your fingers in there, follow it to the suture, and you'll see that the zygomatic bone forms a large part of the lateral wall of the orbit. and the maxilla. Remember, the bone in the middle of the face that helps to mash our food? It also curls in, doesn't it? Follow these suture lines. And it forms a good chunk of the floor or the inferior surface of the orbit. So that's easy. Look, just follow the old friends in, and that should be a gimme on the test. Here comes a new one, though. This littlest one I'm outlining now is the littlest facial bone we're going to study, and conveniently for my pea brain, it starts with an L. It's called the lacrimal bone. Lacrima, root word means tear, and it's the tear bone. Don't put tear bone on the test, but it is the lacrimal bone. I never miss it because it's the littlest bone with the L, and it has a little hole in it as well. That's not really a tear hole. We'll name that later on down the road when we study the whole tear apparatus. But that kind of gives it away to me. Littlest bone with an L for the tears to drain from the surface of your eye into your nose. Did you ever notice when you cry, not only does your eye get watery, but your nose starts to get all drippy too, because there's a bony passageway that goes from your eye socket into your nasal cavity. Nobody misses the lacrimal bone. The other thing that's on your word list is there's a divot or a depression that's right there for a tear sac. And there's a name for that divot or depression on your word list. You know the root word fossa means divot, and some genius named the divot in the tear bone the lacrimal fossa, if you should be asked. Let's move more posteriorly. Here is a big rectangular plate or chunk of bone. This is the most of the medial wall of the orbit. And believe it or not, that's a piece of our old friend, a cranial bone we studied before. This is the ethmoid bone. This, remember I used the vampire example. This would be like the vampire's cape poking into the eye socket, forming the medial wall of the orbit. Then finally, for lab anyway, here's a bone sort of centered in the socket. The bone that's centered in the socket is an old friend of ours as well. It's the sphenoid bone. I remember that the sphenoid bone is centered in the socket, and that's sort of one of my memorization techniques. But some of you are thinking, I need more than that. And don't worry, I have more than that to help you remember things. Don't get nervous on the test. Just remember you have a friend and his name is Les. Do you get it? Les, as in L for lacrimal bone, E for ethmoid bone, and S for sphenoid bone. So just go from front to back as you go from the lacrimal bone to the center of the socket, and that spells L-E-S, lacrimal, ethmoid, sphenoid. And that way, I hope you'll never miss it. Let's try it again using another slightly different angle to make sure we really have this down, because I want you to nail this come test day. Let's do it again, because I want to make sure you really have this down so you can nail it on the test. So here's another view we can quiz ourselves on. And remember, it's easy. Up here in the front is the frontal bone. It curves under and forms the roof or superior part of the orbit. The zygomatic bone off to the side here curls in and forms a large part of the lateral wall of the orbit. Then the maxilla. It curls in and forms a good portion of the floor or inferior portion of the orbit. Then, since that was so easy, we just have to remember our old friend Les, because we don't want to get nervous on the test. And the L stands for the little lacrimal bone with the hole in it. You go back one, then you find this big rectangular deal. You know that's part of the ethmoid bone, that's the E, and then finally centered in the socket with an S, this is your sphenoid bone. Hopefully with those little tips and tricks, you'll never miss those bones. On this slide, I want to go back to another friend of ours because it's blown up really big here. Here are the nasal bones, obviously not part of the eye socket, it's part of the nose, what you would call the bridge of your nose. Believe it or not, most of your nose that you see hanging off your face is really made of cartilage. But anyway, nasal bones in another view. Next up, one of those color-coded pictures from your text that I love to use to reinforce the material. Good one to quiz yourself on, and here it is. Up's going to pop some arrows. Can you name the 7 bones in the orbit? Remember, lucky 7 for the orbit. Lucky for you, you only have to know 6 for lab. And with the memorization techniques I gave you, I hope and believe you're all going to get it right. Let's roll through this. Up pops an arrow. Name that bone. You all say frontal bone, roof of the eye socket. Next, name that bone, lateral wall of eye socket. That's our cheekbone. That's our zygomatic bone curling in. From the bottom, curling in yellow, is our maxilla that forms the inferior portion of the orbit. And then all we have to do is know we have a friend on the test. His name is Les. Boom, arrow comes there. That's L for the littlest lacrimal bone, right? That's the tear bone. Behind that in orange is our E, the ethmoid bone. And finally, always in green, centered in the socket, that's the sphenoid bone. One more bone for lecture, though, because lecture we go beyond what you have to learn in lab. Little guy right there, sort of in a light purple or lilac. That is the palatine bone. The palatine bone is one of the bones on our list. You'll see it later on. Yep, you guessed it, in the palate. But for now, I want you to know for lecture, it is the 7th bone in the eye socket. What I want to do next is get back to the real deal. I want you to grab the skull by the upper jawbone, by the maxilla with both hands. Maybe have your left hand here, some of your fingers, and curl your thumb underneath behind the teeth so your thumb is touching the roof of the mouth, that bony roof that you probably already know is called the hard palate. Then flip that thing over and get this beautiful inferior view. And while you're grabbing it like that with maybe your thumbs here, you will prove to yourself that this bone is still the maxilla. If they say name the bone, you name the bone. The bone is the maxilla. However, this part of this bone has a name. Since it's projecting to the hard palate, they called it the palatine process. You know, process, PRO, is a projection of bone, often named by what it's pointing to, and it's pointing towards the hard palate. They can also tag another part of the maxilla we learned from another view, and that is where these teeth hook into these sockets or pockets. Remember, this is a projection of bone that has pockets for the teeth, and if they put the tag right there and ask you, name this part of this bone, they're right in that teeth area there, call that the alveolar process. Then comes more things on the hard palate. You gotta know the roof of the mouth really well. The back part of the hard palate, note these are separate bones delineated nicely by these orange sutures. And some rocket scientists call these bones the palatine bones. Yeah, the back part of the hard palate are formed by the palatine bones. Easy. We saw them briefly because these also have vertical projections that poke up into the orbit. But for lab, you're just going to see them tagged here. Easy, palatine bones. Furthermore, we have a suture shown in orange split right down the middle of the hard palate. That is something I want you to know from my course for sure. And some genius called this the palatal suture. Look, everything down here pretty much has the root word palate in it. I think that makes it easy. Let's talk about something of clinical significance. You know, sometimes that palatal suture doesn't fuse properly, and I bet you all know the name for that disorder. It's called a cleft palate. Sometimes it's related to folic acid deficiency. That's one of our B vitamins. And mothers who are pregnant, they're given folic acid supplements to try to prevent this and other birth defects. Sometimes the defect in suture fusion even spreads up here between the teeth and the lip, and you call that cleft lip. So you could have cleft lip and cleft palate, and it can be potentially very serious, even life-threatening. You will see, I have seen babies born where the gap in the hard palate is so big that they can't do something that's necessary to live. Can you think of what that might be? They can't provide proper suction, so they can't feed, and they have failure to thrive. They're admitted to the hospital, and now they have something really cool that they didn't have when I was a kid. They have these adjustable metal plates that will allow the face to expand as the child's growing, so they can get in there, do the surgery earlier, and at the same time, let the face grow to its more natural shape and size. So really cool stuff. Maybe fun thing to do an internet search on.
Before we leave this slide, just for fun, I think from this inferior view, you can also see how fragile those zygomatic arches are. So yep, you'll see them broken in facial smash-ups, especially during spring break. I'll throw in the same view, but from one of those color-coded pictures from your textbook. I think for some of you, this might be helpful in making sure you clearly understand where these bones sort of stop and start. I want to now go high power for sort of a review, maybe so you quiz yourself. Here it comes again, but blowing up really big.
And it's easy, guys, right? Name this part of this bone palatine process. Name this bone palatine bone. Name this line palatal suture. Easy.
Some other potential questions.
Name this part of this bone where I'm dragging my arrow across the teeth sockets. You say alveolar process. And finally, it's not a trick question, but they might do this. If they just put a pin there and all the card says is name the bone, don't forget that the bone is still the maxilla.
Nice review there for you. No better time than now to look at the lower jawbone, and here it comes. That's an anterior view of the mandible. A few interesting facts that tend to surface in evaluation situations. This is the largest and strongest and only movable facial bone. Sounds like a potential test question, doesn't it?
What I think is much better to run through the parts you need to know is the lateral view. So let's check it out. Here's a right lateral view of the mandible. If this bone is pinned and they say name the bone, all you write down is mandible and you're done. It's broken down into three major sections. That is the part in the front here, this hunk of bone where sort of like if you'd be rubbing your chin or growing a little goatee down here, this is actually called the body. The body of almost anything in anatomy, whether it's a bone or other organs we'll study, is usually the main meat of that organ. So this part of the front where you kind of rub your chin, name this part of this bone, that's the body. We come back here posteriorly and see where there's a little angle to the jaw, right? The jaw angle? Well, guess what some genius named that? That's called the angle. If the pin is there and they say name this part of this bone, you say angle. Last, we have this big sort of flattish hunk branching upwards. That has a name as well. If they put the tag right there on it and say name this part of this bone, you say ramus. Know your root word ramus. It'll help you later in anatomy. Ramus means branch. So this part branching upwards is called the ramus. Good news for me, and maybe for you, that spells a mnemonic. What are the three major chunks of the mandible? Body, angle, ramus. B-A-R spells bar. Now, don't get me wrong. I mean like a bar of gold, okay? So let's be clear on that. And don't worry on the test. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, are they going to put the pin in between the two, like right here or over here? Or, you know, no. If they want body, they better put it up front here, kind of where your what you would call your chin would be. If they want the angle, they better slap it on the angle. If they want the ramus, they better put it like right smack here in the middle of this big plate branching upwards. Let's do the other players on this slide. How about an old friend? Remember, we got pockets or sockets for teeth? So this is not even a new name. It's a projection of bone for pockets for the teeth, called, one more time, the alveolar process. Let's roll down here to a little hole. You know a hole in anatomy is called a foramen. So you're half right, even without thinking.
The name for that foramen is the mental foramen. Believe it or not, in Greek or Latin, mental has a couple of different interpretations. One of them is mental means chin. But this is the mental foramen. It's the chin hole. Don't call it chin hole on the test. And yes, what goes through there? Blood vessels, nerves, the usual players. Let's stop here and take a clinical breather. And something you should know for the real world. This happened to a friend of mine. A friend of mine was in a motorcycle accident. He had a big gash right across the right side of his jaw here. Needed like 8 billion stitches, something like that. Now, if the doctor was a hack and didn't know what he was doing, maybe he would inject that big cut on my friend's face with like 20 different shots of lidocaine, which had just been all wrong and painful. But if the doctor, remember, he did all this training, not just to get an A on a test, but to help people, he would remember that the nerve that supplies sensation to this whole region comes out of that hole. All he had to do was put one numbing shot right there, which he did, by the way, and my friend was numb for the whole procedure. With one shot of lidocaine, got his whole side of his jaw stitched up. The same thing is true, you'll learn as you progress on, for other things like dental procedures. There's other holes that dentists know where the nerves come out, and hopefully with one shot they can get a whole good side of your jaw numb so they can work on your teeth or whatever. The last two pieces of this bone you got to know are poking up off the ramus. Let's do this one here in the back first. Sort of a rounded knuckle of bone. It is for joint attachment. Remember, the root word for a smooth knuckle of bone that forms a joint is a condyle, and it's on the mandible. So I call it the mandibular condyle. Yeah, it makes sense. This one here is thinner, sharper, pointier. It's called the coronoid process. Why? Process is a projection of bone. Why coronoid? Well, you remember your root word corona means a crown. And it's kind of like the jagged triangular things like on a Burger King crown or something like that. But that's how it got its name. Another way I remember it is, since this one is sharper and pointier, if my teenagers are misbehaving and I want to bonk them on the head, I'm going to crown them on the head with the sharp one. You get it? Corona, coronoid process, crown them on the head. Yeah, that one's going to leave a mark right there. No, I'm only kidding, okay? I do not advocate that at all. I certainly do not hit my kids. It's just a memorization technique. Let's put it all together on the next slide. Literally, let's put it all together. Let's put that lower jawbone called the mandible back in its place. And look where we put the mandibular condyle. We put it in the mandibular fossa of the temporal bone. It fits like hand in glove. And this joint, some genius called the temporomandibular joint, or TMJ. You heard of that, because it's the temporal bone with its mandibular fossa hooking up to the mandible with its mandibular condyle. Another view, if you will. Let's flip this skull over and look at the bottom side. Inferiorly, here we see beautifully the mandibular condyles of the mandible in the mandibular fossa, right, those divots in the temporal bone. And you've heard of something clinically relevant here. You should know what TMJ syndrome is. That's where you have a disorder of this joint and people have pain and popping and clicking. It can come from trauma, it could come from arthritis or other things. But of course you should know what TMJ is. Let's turn our attention now back to the anterior view. Get ready for it, because it's a big blow-up view inside of somebody's nasal cavity, and there it is. Let's focus there. First, how about a little refresher? Always good to review. Please build in periodic reviews to your studies. It's key to long-term learning, retention, and understanding. I like to say this, and you've heard me say it maybe before. I'm no smarter than anyone else listening to this tape. All I did was sit down, study the stuff. I made sure I learned it that day. I knew it stone cold at the end of the day. And then every few days, I would go back and review what I'd already learned. That way, it came back really quick, really fast, and it stuck. So what about some old things on this slide? How about the nasal turbinates? Remember those curly cues that help to warm and swirl and moisten the air we breathe? And my memorization technique was bottoms up? Yeah, we just had a bar, now we're doing bottoms up. But you know I mean this in the right way. Always work on the curly cues from the bottom up. You can hook this with your probe in lab. This bone, if they say to name it, it must be the inferior nasal turbinate. Next one up, actually, you know, must be the middle nasal turbinates. They are part of the ethmoid bone, by the way, if you remember your cranial bones. The superior nasal turbinates cannot be seen from this view. Don't go there. That's why I say work from bottoms up. I must stop here and say something that you'll hear me say over and over again in class. I love anatomy and physiology. Anatomy means parts, physiology means function. Form and function go together. Or as I like to say it, the design matches the mission. Isn't it beautifully how they're designed? I mean, did somebody just make these curly cues just for fun? I'm making a curly cue. I mean, they could have made it any shape in the world. Could have made it a trapezoid or whatever shape. They could have made it a triangle or anything at all. But they're curled, aren't they? And that's what creates the turbulence. Yes, the design matches the mission. Coincidence? I think not. How about we check out the nasal septum, which is one of the big things I want to do on this slide. Here is the bony nasal septum, splitting the nasal cavity into two halves. Believe it or not, most of your nasal septum, or a large part of it, is actually made up of cartilage, but cartilage isn't on the bone test, so we're not going to look at the cartilage. We already did the top half of the bony nasal septum. The superior half is a piece of the ethmoid bone. It's a plate of bone perpendicular to the ground called, you guessed it, the perpendicular plate. It fuses with a brand new bone, a bone that is a facial bone, just like the inferior nasal turbinates are facial bones. This bone is called the vomer. The vomer is the inferior half of the bony nasal septum. I have more figures coming up to help you understand this anatomy a little bit better. What I want you to do is picture me taking a bone saw. I'm going to saw right through the nasal cavity here with a tiny bone saw on either side of the nasal septum, and I'm going to pull that nasal septum out. Picture me pulling it out anteriorly and sucking it out of the head. Or there's another way to picture this, because I want you to be ready for this, because I know they like to use it on the bone test. So on the next slide, this is our superior view looking down into the skull with the skull cap removed. Here's our old friend from the top called the ethmoid. Here's our old friend, the butterfly, called the sphenoid. And another way to picture this next thing coming up is I could take a bone saw like this and saw just off to the side of the crista galli, all the way through the sphenoid bone, through the sella turcica. Then I'll also take my bone saw and saw just to the right side of the crista galli, through the cribriform plate, through the sella turcica, and then we could picture this next bone section I'm about to show you as being a little sliver of bone sucked out through the top of the head. And there it is. I know it might be a little overwhelming at first, but just calm down. I'm going to get you situated so you can nail this puppy. This is not a bone. This is a conglomeration of several bones together. But I'll tell you the pieces you need to know. Let's get oriented. This is superior. This is inferior. This is anterior. And this is posterior. How do I know? With some visual clues and memorization tips and tricks. This looks like a fish to me, and this looks like the mouth of the fish or of a shark. And I know the fish mouth is in the front. So in lab, I pick it up and I kind of swim it around in the air and I pretend that this is the fish mouth in the front. Furthermore, look up here on the top. It looks like a crest, like the crest of a cardinal. And you know that's on the top of the head. Let that help you. In addition, we got this U-shaped thing. And I know U stands for up. So that's a right side up U. Really, that's not a U though. That is the pituitary fossa in the cella turcica of this sphenoid bone. And if we turned it upside down, the pituitary gland would fall out of our head. Well, not really, but I just use that as a memorization technique. U for up. With that information in hand, I think the rest of it, with a little bit of studying, is easy. Let's name the parts you're going to see tagged. Up here, the crest. They put a pin on that and say, name that piece. That's our old friend on the ethmoid bone called the crista galli. Down below it, that's still the ethmoid bone. That's the plate of bone that's perpendicular to the ground. It's the superior half of the bony nasal septum, and this is called the perpendicular plate, which fuses about right here with another bone. It's the bottom half of the bony nasal septum. It's a facial bone. It's a separate bone embryologically in and of and all by itself. This bone is called the vomer. It's the bottom half of the bony nasal septum. Maybe your root words will help you here. Vomer means a plow, and it kind of does look like a plow. If you ever seen a plow, if you lived up north, seen snow plows. I know if someone gave me this bone to play with, I would take it out in the dirt and I'd plow the dirt with it. It does remind me of a true story. When I was 5 years old, my dad, he was a big collector of these sort of antique Lionel trains. I mean the big old ones, the heavy ones with three rails and the ginormous transformer with double handles. And you can make the train smoke and whistle and all that stuff. Well, one day I thought it'd be a good idea to go in the basement and get one of those trains out. And I was out by the sidewalk. I'll never forget it. I had that big engine and I'm plowing in the dirt. And about 5 o'clock, my dad comes walking up the sidewalk, and there I am plowing one of his antique collectible Lionel trains in the dirt. Talk about post-traumatic stress syndrome. You know in the old days what happened after that. In any case, that's my story about plowing stuff. Another thing you might hear, so I'll bring it up. Don't ever do this, of course, but you may have heard there's this karate move where you could take a karate chop like up this way into the nose and drive this plate of bone into the brain and cause sudden death or serious injury. I thought that was just a myth. But I did an internet search on that. Apparently, it's true. Apparently, there's a martial arts move that if you're trained a certain way to defend yourself, that you can actually drive that plate of bone up and seriously injure and or kill somebody. I know this is a rough area for a lot of students, so I threw in one of those color-coded pictures from your textbook. I love this thing. Not going to reiterate the whole deal we just did on the slide, but I think you can match that fishbone up here perfectly. This is basically what we just had on the other slide, minus the cartilage. Let's do some clinical stuff on the slide that I want you to know. You've heard of nasal fractures, right? Someone gets a broken nose. You know what that really refers to? Mostly when someone has a broken nose, usually the broken nose is really a broken part of the septal cartilage. A large part of the nasal septum is made of cartilage, and that's what usually breaks. What about a deviated septum? We've all heard about that. A septum is just a divider, and the nasal septum is supposed to divide the nasal cavity into two symmetric halves, but it's not always that way. And sometimes the septum will curve into one half of the nasal cavity and block it off and cause breathing problems. People get, you know, then surgery for it. A deviated septum usually occurs about right here where the septal cartilage meets up with the vomer. So now you know. Let's keep it real. Let's keep it clinical on the next slide. And since we've discussed some of the cranial and facial bones, great time to talk about the paranasal sinuses. And I love the name. It tells you exactly what and where they are. Sinuses, when you ever see that word, is just an opening. Nasal means the nose, and para, root word, means next to. Get to know that root word. You'll see it a lot in anatomy. So these are cavities in the bones that are next to the nose. Yes, cavities in certain cranial and facial bones near the nasal cavities. Let's look at them in the figures from your textbook. Off to your left, an anterior view, and off to your right, a right lateral view with the beautiful color coding that I love. And guess what? In blue, in the frontal bones, we have a sinus, you guessed it, called the frontal sinus. In orange, in the ethmoid bone, we have ethmoid sinus. In green, in the sphenoid bone, we have a sphenoid sinus. And in yellow, in the maxillae, we have the maxillary sinuses. What are they and what are they for? Well, they're lined by mucous membranes that are continuous with the mucous membranes in the nasal cavity. What are their functions? What are their three functions? Mucous membranes, of course, make mucus. And we already touched on the fact that the mucus helps to moisten and humidify the air that we breathe. So that's function number one. Function number two is, as the skull grows in the early years, it allows the skull to expand without gaining a lot of bony weight, so it keeps our head a lot lighter than it would have been rather than being made a solid bone. Third function is it helps with the tone or the quality of our voice. You notice if you ever had a sinusitis, your voice changes, doesn't it? This slide would not be complete, of course, without talking about sinusitis. We've all heard about it. Maybe we've had an episode of it. And it is what it says it is. It's an itis, an inflammation, or more typically an infection of the sinuses. And you can get any one of these sinuses infected. It's even possible to have all the sinuses infected at the same time. When that sphenoid sinus gets infected, there deep in the middle of your head where you know the sphenoid bone is, that's kind of the Mac Daddy of sinusitis. That's an uncomfortable and a hard one to treat. Speaking of treatment, I just want to mention at the time of this recording, in recent months and years, it's been real controversial, and ENT doctors have gone back and forth on which antibiotics to use, how long to use them, or even whether or not it makes any difference or not to use antibiotics at all. So I thought it was interesting, at least to bring up at this point in time, that treatment of sinusitis has been controversial lately. I love this slide too. Here is a right lateral view looking at the nasal cavity, because you know if you have a sinusitis, you get that funky sort of thick sinus drainage, don't you? This shows the pathway. Each sinus actually has a specific passageway it takes and drains out a little hole underneath the different turbinates that we studied, and this figure shows that. But now at least you have this visual to understand exactly how you get that cruddy sinus drainage. I know what some of you are thinking right now. Man, the skull is tough, and it is. It's the biggest, toughest part of the lab test for sure, and you're probably feeling like your head's about to explode, aren't you? Well, on the next slide, it is. Here is an exploded skull. This is a right lateral view of what's technically called a disarticulated skull, but we affectionately call it the exploded skull. It's in the lab. You should study it. It helps you. I think an exploded skull is a great way to end this discussion. See you on the next segment.